But it was just a group of guys I grew up with since like the fifth grade, and went to San Diego State, got a degree. And when I was trying to figure out what to do, about a month after I graduated, got a record deal with Sony. We toured on that for about 6-7 years.
Welcome to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. Millard Chan and Andrew Moss launched this podcast to give a voice to the countless founders, angel investors, incubators, supporters, and startup events located in San Diego.
Welcome back to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. Andrew, how you doing, man?
I am not too bad, Mill. Just, you know, we're cranking out a few episodes today. We're here at Desk Hub down in Little Italy. It's a great space, and you know, looking forward to hearing from our guests today.
Yeah, thanks so much to Monique Williamson for getting us access to this space. You know what's really cool is we've got blues musicians, people with hip-hop, and now we've got some rock stars on the episode, man.
That is very true. I didn't even think about that way. But yeah, we've actually had quite a little bit of the music industry here speaking to us. So it's been interesting.
Actually, I'm really excited to introduce our guests. So we've got Brian Karsig and Nick Venti, who are co-founders of Black Box, an app that connects life's moments through a combination of music, photo, and video. So imagine the Instagram of music. Music fans have infinite possibilities with music streaming, but no social media platform dedicated to music. So Brian is a touring musician, record producer, and mixer for the last 16 years with bands Louis the 14th, The Nervous Records, and also The Killers. Nick is a songwriter and singer for Nicki Venus, and also the drummer and manager for Republic of Letters. Wow. Startup Talk has inadvertently been highlighting entrepreneurs with roots in rock, the blues, and hip-hop. Hashtag music, universal language. Brian, Nick, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, you know, could you just, I'm really interested in talking about the music for a second here. Could you describe the styles of music that you, Nick, and Brian play respectively?
What's your take? What do you play?
I guess it's in rock. It's in the rock world. We met when I was in an indie rock band, sort of like early U2 style. That's the Republic of Letters band. And then the Nicki Venus is kind of like Depeche Mode, a little bit of a mix of electronic
Mode,
and
man. 80s and, is my jam.
Yeah. So I grew up with my older brother's records, and all that stuff is kind of nostalgic. And it just accidentally sounded like that, really, because I was making music off my computer. I don't play guitar or piano or anything like proficiently, right? So I relied on out of the box DAWs that come out of there, and then the sounds that just made sense to me ended up kind of sounding like that world, you know. So it's interesting what you can do in out of computers now, and what opportunities it opens up to people who have like a creative mind and understand music, but don't necessarily play any kind of like key instruments well. You know, I play drums well, but I don't play that kind of stuff, but I was still able to write track.
So think of the DAWs and computers as enabling nerds to play music. Not calling you a nerd.
I'm a nerd. I definitely am.
Brian?
You know, I started a long time ago. I went to college. I was in high school and college. I started a band, Convoy, we were called. And basically...
Did you serve Chinese food?
On Convoy, yes. No, but I'm a huge fan. But it was just a group of guys I grew up with since like the fifth grade, and went to San Diego State, got a degree. And when I was trying to figure out what to do, about a month after I graduated, got a record deal with Sony. We toured on that for about 6-7 years, had a nice...
I like the way you just glossed right over it. So a month
very
after...
Very casual.
Yeah, a month after graduating from SDSU, you got a record deal with Sony?
Yeah. And they, you know, we had a national hit, toured the U.S. for about 7 years, played pretty much every state but Alaska. And that band dissolved in about 2001, and I started Louis the 14th. We got real lucky there, too. And I'd say about 6 months after that band's incarnation, we got noticed by the BBC One and a couple bands called Queens of the Stone Age, and the Distillers started... Wearing like the Louis the 14th t-shirt, The Killers were just coming up with their album Hot Fuss. They liked Louis the 14th, asked us to go on tour with them shortly after we signed with Atlantic Records and toured for about 10 years on that all over the world. Had a couple big hits, and that's the good life, man. You know, playing the big stages and traveling the world. And we disbanded about 2014. And in that time, I started playing guitar and piano in South America for Brandon Flowers, who's the singer of The Killers, who had a couple number one solo records. Asked me to just fill in on a tour for him, and that led to them asking me to do The Killers tour, just playing guitar after that. So it was a heck of a year last year. So in that time, started an app, toured the world with The Killers, and now we're kicking butt with Black Box.
How did you and Nick meet?
A dating app, actually.
Yeah, I swiped right.
Listen, I don't judge, guys.
Brian, we got connected through the attorney for Republic of Letters at the time was representing one of the other artists that Brian had produced, right? So we just spent a month in the studio recording a record for that band, and we just hit it off and became friends from there. And then years later, we decided to do this, just we had a kind of mutual interest in tech and offering something to the business, since we knew it well, and we wanted to stay and kind of contribute a little bit more after that. So, yeah.
I'm going to get just a nerdy question I have. So, since you're a drummer, mm-hmm. Nick, so do all drummers have a distinctive signature, a style of play that you hear the drums, you say, oh, that's Nick Venti,
all
right?
Not all drummers, John Benham. Yeah, I mean, there's the ones like Stuart Copeland, John Bonham, and there's people that you hear play and you know that's that guy. But you really kind of have to study it to know. I don't know. Like a lot of drummers nowadays, they run their drums through this thing called Beat Detective, and it'll be sort of like, which is basically moves every drum into a perfect. Everything's basically turned into pop kind of formula now, you know, and there's not a lot of room for swing and at least in like that format, right? So when you're talking about like understanding a guy's style, that sort of comes into that type of playing, right? Like the way that they lag on the on the hi-hat over the kit or the kick and snare, like that feel that somebody brings is sometimes gets taken out now.
So you trained up on acoustic drums, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So to me, it's just crazy because you're using all four appendages. And so are you using both sides of your brains? How can you actually use your left hand and right hand and kind of draw and write at the same time? Because you're using things independently.
To be ambidextrous. Not with writing. I mean, my handwriting's not good with my right hand, so my left hand isn't too much better. But yeah, I'm all right, actually. I like to be able to do things with both. So it's like a little game I play. I usually will do stuff with my left hand and just, you know, I do martial arts too. So that drumming
What style?
Wing Chun.
Oh, Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
That's Bruce Lee's.
Bruce Lee, yeah, he started with Wing Chun and sort of made it his own. But yeah, the drumming and the independent thing is useful in that too. So yeah,
that's fascinating. Yeah. I'd like to take a deep dive into that one of these days.
Cool.
So bands, what's the single greatest thing about being in a band, guys? If you have
creation, really just being creative and making stuff with your friends.
Yeah, I think that what I liked about bands is that you would spend time, you would make a song, you could record it and listen back and be like, I made that, you know, and this is the whole presentation of a package and a look and a sound. And it's interesting because it feathers so well into the tech business, right? Like, or just into business in general, but especially into the app game, like, we see so many parallels between the music business and this other world that, you know, like it just makes it a little bit easier to understand what's happening. It doesn't make it any easier, right? It's definitely a hard game, but.
Well, the hunt of the game is very similar in music as it is in the tech world. In music, you kind of have to pony up all your own money, put together your own team, make your demo, try to get a little bit of a fan base, and then you go on the hunt. Either you try to get some money from friends and family to make a better demo, or go into a local studio, or you hunt for what the VCs are in the music world, which is the right major record labels, try to get a big infusion of cash to get that marketing money behind you, the pro recording, and money to get on the road and go push it.
Well, you've also got to be on the same, you know, as a team and as a band, I'm sure you have to be on the same page and being, you know what path you really want to take. Because if people are thinking two separate things, then you're really going to lead towards failure rather than success.
Yeah.
Too many cooks in the kitchen, I think, in any venture is a bad idea. You know, there's plenty of room for sous chefs, but there's kind of got to be that one head chef, you know.
So speaking of the venture, how did Black Box come about?
It's kind of an evolution of different ideas that we'd been working on. We were just at El Zarape having some lunch one day and talking about, well, what can we do on the business side? And we'd come up with an app idea that was more focused towards bands specifically. And then once we realized that bands are not the best market to market to, like they don't have any money and they're lazy and they have a lot of different places to, they're spread out, you know, like just doing social media on top of their music stuff is difficult for them, for most musicians to handle. So, to offer one more thing for them to do was not the best thing, but it was good for us to be able to experience putting together a dev team and building a product, putting it out. And then we did another one, and then we finally landed on this idea for Black Box, and it's evolving too as we get feedback. Now we're in the marketplace, and we're kind of getting feedback from the user base and getting ideas for next iterations and where we want to take it.
So the Black Box app is already launched?
Yeah, I got a public beta in the app store right now. But
How long has it been on the app store, the public beta?
Five or six weeks.
Okay.
So, and we haven't put any marketing into it. There's just word of mouth, or there's some community that really loves to search out beta mm-hmm. products in the App Store, I think. You know, people are just interested in, you know, obviously when we go on and see the new user signups daily, we could see some friends in there, we see some people that we meet at mixers, but then you got this handful of people that are like, hey, where the heck did you come from? You
know? So what's the Venn diagram of people that search out beta apps and people that are really into music and social media?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I don't know that. I think that for that organic growth, it's hard to find out. I guess we'd have to just reach out. How did you find us? You know, how did you?
Like, so personally, I would assume you probably have reached out to all your previous audience, all your previous bands, and all your networks, and just
not quite yet. We wanted to get a stable with this app, and we wanted to make sure that, you know, all the things that we wanted in the app are built and ready to sort of do that next phase. So, because you get one shot with people's attention span, you know, it's like in the music space now, you don't say, hey, we have a record coming out in next month. People forget, and they don't, you know, it's like when you use that capital, like to send the email and say, hey, you know, here we are, record's out right now, go download it. You know, people are, if they're going to get your attention, if you got their attention, you want to be able to do that. And it's the same, we kind of see it the same way in this space.
So what are the features currently on the beta version, and then what are the features that you're going to ultimately have on the launch, the regular launch?
Well, right now we're doing, like you said in our intro, kind of an Instagram of music. We wanted to address just a couple of problems that we found. You know, Nick and I kind of come from a generation where there was record stores where you could walk in, meet random people. There's a community there that's all interested in discovering new music. I remember when I was a kid, my dad would go to Home Depot down there on Sports Arena and drop me off at the Tower Records while he went and shopped. And today I still talk to a couple of dudes that I met down there. I remember looking through the albums one day and a kid leans over my shoulder and he lifted up the Smashing Pumpkins Gish album on vinyl, which I should have bought back then. But he's like, you got to hear this record. It's really good. But it was the day of when CDs were coming out, and I bought the CD instead. But this kid's name's Ryan Klein. I still talk to him, you know, but met him in the store. And now with record stores gone, radios kind of feeds you the same 15, 20 songs in a loop over and over.
And that's why I use music apps, dude. Just regular radio is just so boring.
Yeah, and even with music apps, the discovery portion of it seems a little force-fed. It's like, you were listening to Rolling Stones, Leon Russell, and Arcade Fire. We think you'd love this new Taylor Swift album that drops February 9th. Because
they're pushing Taylor Swift.
What the heck? Yeah. So
exactly.
We just found that the best curation and best recommendation engine is from your friends and people who you have similar interests in. You know, I wish, I say this to Nick all the time, I wish my, when I was in eighth grade, my older sister had this cool boyfriend who would say, hey man, have you ever heard of U2? You ever heard of The Alarm? And he turned me on to all of these bands that at the time weren't really on the radio. They were kind of the underground coming up to the mainstream. And where do you find those now? There's no 120 minutes on MTV. There's no cool late night radio station that plays the what's coming out, what's new and alternative. So we figured let's just create a community of where people can figure out what people they have other things in common with and their friends and find music. The problem was when you start an engine that just shares a little URL stream or a clip, it's kind of boring. People are just thumbing through it and maybe people won't. So we figured everybody's always glued to their phones looking at people's personal videos and personal media, and mixed with the idea that Top Gun with Tom Cruise wouldn't have been anything without Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone.
Oh, yeah.
Let's make a piece of our own life. Running down the beach on Instagram is listening to wind and birds chirping, but running down the beach on Black Box is the theme to Rocky or Chariots of Fire, you know, or Echo and the Bunnymen, whatever. Just, it enhances a life moment.
Lips like sugar.
Lips like sugar, you know, and it very well may spawn a new discovery for one of your friends. But at the same time, it gives you that kind of cool currency that I used to get in the eighth grade wearing my Jane's Addiction shirt. Whoa, who's that band? Brian's cool. Jane's Addiction. Well, now you kind of got, oh, Brian's cool. He just shared Echo and the Bunnymen with his beach picture or whatever. You know, so.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, it's just, our goal was to bring people together, make it fun, and make it, you know, sort of simple and easy. The app that we put out is like pared down, like one does one thing, does one thing well, like is puts a moment of your life to a song, right? And so we just wanted to do that. It was part of our patent idea, and since we needed to kind of put it in the marketplace for that, it needed to be in use, right? So yeah, I don't know. Just a lot of the stuff that we just wanted to say, let's do that. Built a dev team around it and put it together. And so where we're going, I don't know. Do we let the cat out of the bag?
To the moon and back. We
can focus on what you already have. So what does that mean about putting a moment of the user's life to music? So how is the moment chosen? How is the music clip chosen?
So you can... Basically, we let you take any song or photo or video off your like library on your phone, right? Okay. So we're just on iOS right now, so whatever's on your iPhone, and then you just search for whatever song, and we pull it from like a digital streaming source, and it pairs over the top, right? What we're not doing is creating a new work of art by putting the two together and sort of like creating a new dot movie file or whatever, like MP4 that has the two together, right? So what we wanted to do is give the artist the option to A, remove their song from any kind of visual content, right? But to down the road be able to monetize their music on top of people's moments if that's what they want to do with the song, you know? We had some theories about like when you pair a moment of your life to a song, would that make you more apt to go to their show, buy a shirt, buy the song? You know, like you've sort of like cemented that moment in your life to that song in that moment. So what would the future actions do, right, from that point on? And so that's sort of the what we wanted to find out down the road with the app. So we just wanted to start there and see where the action train would go.
You know? Is DRM any issue with this app, the digital rights management?
Currently, no. We're just kind of laying in the gray area, right? And we're hoping that since we're not allowing these things to fly out of the app, right, and staying contained, I mean, we want to be friendly to the business. I think that's actually why a lot of the music apps that have done things similar or just on whatever, you know, like they failed because they think that they can go against these big companies and get them to bend, you know, and where, you know, it's kind of the opposite. Like you build a business around music, you're sort of at their whim, you know, versus the other way around. And we wanted to build something that was beneficial to them as well, because we saw, like, say, for example, iTunes sales has gone down dramatically, but the amount of streams has gone up dramatically, right? So, but the compensation for streams is so low that it's an important part of a working artist's income, but it's not what it used to be when you could sell a CD or when people were actually buying iTunes downloads, right?
Now it's mainly about touring. That's where they make their big bucks.
Mm-hmm. Is where everyone makes bucks.
I mean, and I guess that's a part of the business the whole for lots of years, right? But there's so many options on these devices that we carry in our pockets every day that why haven't we kind of like grabbed more opportunity in it? So, yeah, I mean, it's a deep topic, but it's definitely what we're trying to accomplish, you know? Yeah.
In terms of the business, have you started reaching out to these software publishers to see if they can be on board with what you all are doing at Blackbuck?
Yeah, we've been lucky enough to sit down with Napster, Pandora. We even had a nice talk with Warner Music, the guy who's the head of technology and music partnerships. Like Nick said, we're not trying to, you know, compete against the music business. We're trying to be a companion, you know, somebody to help it. We're musicians making something for users that encourages more music consumption, which in return will eventually get artists more pay. If we can, this, you know, like Nick said, if you play a show and you sell a CD, you're getting a buck a song right there. Or you're only getting 0.08% on a stream. The only way to really increase that, because they're not budging on those rates, is to just make more media and more fun things for users to stream more music. Let's get the streams up and artists will make more money.
And go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you please.
I was just going to say that, you know, when you get down to it, like there's the monetization possibilities are kind of endless, but you really need to focus on back to the product market fit. It's just like, you know, at a band, like if you can start getting a following in your hometown, you've sort of found product market fit in your small town or wherever you are. So the same thing with here, like it doesn't matter how we're going to make money for either artists or labels or whatever, there needs to be eyeballs and ears, you know, on the other end of the business. So that's what we're focusing on. And that's why we wanted to put, since, you know, we're on the train in the Bay Area just recently and having some meetings up there, and we were just kind of looking around, like everyone was looking down at their phones, right? And that's what we should be doing with music. You know, everybody else is doing their own version for whatever business, but definitely we're trying to put eyes to music so that, you know, we can sort of move the ball forward.
And there's something to be said about flipping the way a media is kind of consumed. You know, books were traditionally read. Audible came around and you start listening to books. It creates this whole new market. I don't want to say I don't read. I do read, but I don't take the time to sit down with a book as much as I should. I'm usually on the go.
A lot of people are stuck a long time in traffic, right?
That's true.
Or they're at the gym or whatever they're doing. Why not use that time to kind of learn something?
Exactly. And we're kind of doing the same thing with music, which has been traditionally listened to by ears. If you can bring eyes to it, it just opens up a lot of opportunity to do other things for artists, sell your t-shirts, sell your tickets, things like that. And you know, we just want to be the hub, the one place that helps musicians, but users want to go to discover and connect, and where artists want users to be to bring awareness to what they're doing creatively.
Yeah, I think you guys are going about it the right way with, you know, everything kind of moving to mobile apps and, you know, yeah, eyes are going there. My big question to you is, why did you decide to start up here in San Diego? I know you're from here, but LA is such a bigger market for music. What drew you to stay in San Diego and work from here?
I mean, I'm not sure we're sold on staying in San Diego. We just grew up here, and it's kind of the thing. I think we like to put a flag in the dirt, so to speak, in our hometown. I remember when we were starting Louis the 14th, everybody was like, oh, if you want to make it in a band, you got to move to L.A. And I was just like, no we don't. We can work just as hard from here and get out on the road and do everything that bands in L.A. are doing.
Because you're touring anyway.
Yeah, we signed a big record deal, made it, and I never moved to L.A. I can't imagine. My agent, Kirk, is up there, and he lives 20 minutes away from his house. His office is in Beverly Hills. He lives right over the valley. And he says every night when he gets off work, it takes him an hour and a half to go 20 minutes.
That's crazy.
I don't think I can handle that.
Flying cars hopefully will solve that issue. Or Tesla's
That's where Blackbox is going, yeah. The flying car.
Yeah, you know, we of course love San Diego. We hope that we could be a part of a growing tech scene here. But, you know, obviously if we need to go somewhere else to see our dreams happen, we'll definitely do it. But, you know, I think it was easier for me to stay in San Diego. We have like kind of a support network here where we can focus 100% on the app instead of having to go get jobs in another town, you know?
So speaking of that support network, I'm sure you've got deep ties in the music scene, but in terms of either the software, app, technology, startup scene in San Diego, what's the level of interaction that you have so far in support and resources?
Well, they've been real supportive to us, actually, you know?
We got lucky in where we've kind of run the gamut at this point with all previous ideas we've done and bootstrapping this thing and being musicians jumping into the tech world. We've done the Odesk and hired some people from India, people from the Philippines, try to build ideas. I just think it's not very conducive to our business running on all cylinders when Nick and I work all day on it, and then you got to take a phone call at midnight to talk to your dev team. So we stumbled upon the idea of, if we can just build a team here in town where we can get together weekly, have coffees, get together for a beer, and all kind of look over each other's shoulder and build something and be on the same page, that would be ideal. The hard part about that, being bootstrap musicians, is developers are freaking expensive and hard to come by. So we got lucky, found one guy who just happened to work at Sharp Medical, building a lot of their technology and apps and things like that. But it's not the sexiest of jobs, I think, and that's their words, not mine, where doing something in the music space with some musicians seemed really cool and fun. And he found a couple other buddies, on two iOS guys, two back-end guys. We all got together. We all kind of hit it off, had a common interest in music, and built a team here in town. And from there, it was whiteboard sessions once or twice a week, and then go off and here's our weekly goals and you guys knock them out and Nick and I'll crack the whip and be annoying. Mm-hmm. And you guys can tell us exactly how much we're asking you guys for. No.
And but you're asking about the tech community too.
Yeah, that's right.
In San Diego.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't until the Blackbox idea, like we had a mentor that was helping us, and we never even really thought to get involved in the tech things. We were like, okay, we'll just raise money and do this thing, and we didn't really focus too much on the network, right? But when we got into Springboard at Connect, and then just started kind of got funneled into it, and we met a lot of great people, and it's been great so far. You know, everybody that we've met has been real positive about what we're doing and good about helping out, and you know, so we like it.
And so do you spend most of your time working on this app, or do you still have time to play music and go out and go to concerts and do your own thing? Or is it really sort of focusing on working on this app now?
I mean, we're head down for sure on this. We spend daylight hours, like work hours on this. And then we have to talk to our developers usually after hours too, because they're doing some moonlight stuff. But yeah, so a lot of our time has gone into this. But we still, I still do music and hang out. And,
yeah, you know, he's in a studio band. every night. So I have no life. It's app during the day and music at night, and next thing you know, it's 2 a.m.
All right, so as we wrap up the episode, Nick and Brian, how can people reach out to you guys?
You can find us on from the website, blackboxapp.com. It's blkboxapp.com. Just shoot us an email or come find us out and about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
All right, folks, if you want to reach out to us, you can tweet at Startup Talk Pod, tweet me personally at Millard Y. Chan, send us an email, startuptalkpodcast@gmail.com, or check out our website, startuptalkpodcast.com. Brian, Nick, thanks very much for sharing your story with us today.
Totally. Thanks for having us. Yeah, appreciate it.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew.
Let's get started. Hey, folks, please subscribe to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew on iTunes and rate and review us. It helps other people find this podcast. This episode was produced by Millard Chan and Andrew Moss. Our sound editor is Lee Liang. Additional voices from Mindy Nguyen. Our theme music is Good Times by Poddington Bear from soundofpicture.com. Our podcast Sherpa is Charles Wilchett.